Speaking of 501c3s, we have Tim Sullivan coming up next, and you're listening to WSLR, 96.5 RPFM in Sarasota, Florida. You're a true community radio station. This show is called The Surreal News. You're a weapon of mass instruction. That's Greg Powers gave us that name. And we're delighted to join the studio here, Tim Sullivan. Good morning, Tim.
Hi, Tim. It's nice to see you, too.
All right, Tim. Let me turn you up again. I say good morning one more time.
Good morning.
Now I put your slider up so you can actually hear you here. So Tim has been with the United for a Fairer Economy since 2006. Just a brief bio. Across functions of the organization, finance and operations, fundraising, communications, and programs. Also uploading his bio, which he did last night. I'll throw that in there. As a member of primary focus of federal policy advocacy, co-author of State of the Dream, which we reported on last time when that came out, was on the show. You have an associate degree in BA from Rossville Community College. Okay, valedictorian graduating class, congratulations. Born and raised in the Boston area, my old stomping ground, I'm an MIT grad. And now you're in Roslyn Dale, and you have a wife, Suzanne. Any kids? This morning, and the reason why I wanted to on the show was about that Forbes report. So tell us what's the news, and then I have a number of news items to discuss about that.
Well, Forbes just this week released their Forbes 400, which they describe as the definitive scorecard of policy in America. We've been looking at that, and for their economy, we deal with wealth and economic inequality. It seemed a bit off that the definitive scorecard of wealth was really on the coming one side of the story. It's sort of a celebration of the sort of fabulous wealth and some of these, I'll say, absurd and the levels of how wealthy people are has gotten quite ridiculous. So we were both looking at that and the idea that they're not telling as a whole story. Is designed to, like I said, promote and celebrate this fabulous wealth. Inside that, they're also, state in this year's report that 70% made their fortunes entirely from scratch. So we wanted to take a look at what were the real sources of wealth and what is the true story of economic opportunity. And we found that not surprisingly, it's not very well shared, and the Forbes list shows some of those aspects pretty well. Particularly, it's a very white, very male list. And for instance, there's only one black person on the list last year and this year, and for a few years before that. So it's not representative, certainly, of the population. And why is that? The idea that opportunity is not shared equally, there's pre-existing conditions. Whether or not you inherit $1 billion, which you can still get significant advantages. Now, a good example of that is Warren Buffett, who the Forbes list describes as a self-made man, and certainly he deserves all the credit in the world for amassing such a large fortune, but he's also the son of a U.S. congressman who certainly had every advantage to explore his interests in allocating capital, as he put it. And he actually is a good example as well, because he recognizes that he didn't do it on his own, and describing him as self-made is a bit inaccurate.
All right, so the Forbes report, many of us, I guess, many of us, myself included, don't necessarily read the Forbes all the time here. And did you report on the 400 wealthiest people, correct?
The 400 wealthiest people in the country, yes.
All right, so tell us about the combined wealth of these 400 people and what the facts are here.
Well, this year in 2012, the combined wealth of the 400 wealthiest people is it's astronomical. It grew, I believe, 14% in the last year, which became shocking, even more shocking, before it started putting the flip value in 1982, and it has grown 15-fold since then. Over that same period, median wages and median wealth have basically stagnated. Wages have barely kept up with inflation, and median wealth has actually, in a lot of cases, gone down over recent years. And so there's essentially just getting richer and richer, and the divide between the super wealthy and the rest of the country is getting getting larger. And we're seeing a lot of, we see a lot of reasons for that. It's because policy is tilted to favor the super wealthy. For a fair economy, particularly focused on tax policy. And the two big ones are capital gains, which I believe half of all capital gains, net capital gains, increases the richest, not 1%, but 0.1% of the population. The capital gains are taxed at a much lower rate than income that people work for a living today. And the other one that we focus on is the estate tax, which also applies only to a terribly small fraction of the country at its current level. It's not even 0.1, it's 0.01. So it's 0.01% of the population will ever have to pay the estate tax, because it does only apply to accumulated fortunes. And it continues to be under attack and is up for changes at the end of the year as part of the fiscal cliff. And it's a very realistic possibility that it could be repealed unless Congress takes action to actually do something good.
All right, before we get to that, I do want to talk about that. Part of the report, I believe, six of the wealthiest people in America pay no federal income tax.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, there's several reasons for it. The biggest has to do with the preference between capital gains, which includes not only an extremely low rate, the top rate on capital gains, top tax rate is, is half that of an income. And then there's a lot of other ways that capital gains can be deferred and offset with the losses. And ultimately what happens, and we've seen it with many rich people, their tax returns is that they come up with ways to move money offshore to offset their losses that end up really, really reducing their tax liability to the point in many cases where they pay actually they're sitting on these massive fortunes and contributing nothing back in federal income taxes. I do want to say on that note that everybody does pay taxes. There are sales taxes and excise taxes and so forth. So there is some tax being paid, but it's not federal income tax. And that's just atrocious. But these, while we're dealing with cuts of services and a large deficit, and really looking at tax increases in lots of different areas and shifting of the burden that these people with massive fortunes are paying, it's not criminal, but it perhaps should be.
So let me just share with our listeners a little bit about United for a Fairer Economy, your mission, et cetera, and the idea to raise awareness about the concentrated wealth and power undermines the economy, corrupts democracy, deepens our racial divide, I want to talk to you about that too, and tears communities apart. These are great issues. And that you are supporting to build social movements. Your vision is of a global society where prosperity is better shared, with its general genuine equality of opportunity, I'm basically reading from your website here, where the power of concentrated money corporations neither dominates the economy nor dictates the content of the culture. Society in which values not profits and government godly economic issues. I love that. We're trying to get that message across. Your goals, of course, are to close the growing wealth divide. Yes, well, I want to talk to you about that, the divide. And changing the rules that tilt tax benefits towards the wealthy. Okay, so we can talk about that spotlight, the role of racing the economic inequality, form, et cetera. All right, so there's a number of really important issues. One of the things I guess that sort of struck me first was this deepening the racial divide. Tell us about that.
Well, there's a massive racial wealth divide. It's not just wealth. We have the United for a Fair Economy, and with this poor media, we put a lot of our attention on wealth in the media, and sort of popularly people tend to think of income as being kind of the major measure of economy and of well-being. And really, we'd like to try to put as much focus back on wealth, because wealth is what provides you with stability, and sort of most people, the average person, live off of their income, but having wealth provides stability and lets people, you can deal with a sickness in the family, make investments to better your future. It's sort of wealth is the real difference. And also, the divide is greater with wealth. And that is particularly the case if you look at it by race. So, we, for several years, we've been every year in January releasing a report that sort of updates the state of money with the change of dream. Just basically what we've been finding is that we're making some progress towards reducing it, but the sort of idea that we're in a post-racial society, that things have been solved, is wildly misleading, because we don't have opportunities, we don't have a situation where communities are seeing their wealth grow equally at all. In fact, recently we've seen that the communities of color have just been wiped out by this recent recession, especially with the housing market, the crash of the housing market just destroyed communities of color exactly as their wealth is done. Which is another important thing, which is not just how much do people have, but what is happening. So if you look at both the lighter and the richer individuals and households, they have their wealth in places like the stock market, which has what the voter described as the liquid sources, which have a lot of advantages. And if you also look at the recovery that we've had, it's been a recovery in the stock market. So where the wealth is invested in white communities, small market communities of color.
And if you look at, I'll just going to put some statistics out here, because other, I heard about this from you first, and then, of course, now some other people reporting those other news items out there. One of the news items that about a third of the tax breaks goes to the top 1%, and only in the 20s, et cetera, of the tax breaks goes to sort of the rest of us. So there's a sort of a pet peeve I have of a term which I've never heard anybody mention, which is a fundamentalist capitalist. So we hear that fundamentalist Islam and fundamentalist other religions and other. How does it. This term, which I invented, I haven't heard anybody else say this before, I'm implying that we've lost our moral compass here, and that money is the only thing that in capitalism, this fundamentalist capitalist view that matters, in other words, property or people's quality of life, the only thing that matters. Do you think that we're heading towards a fundamentalist capitalist system?
I think that it's a great phrase, first off. And I think that there is some risk of that. I think that certainly we've seen in the political arena, in my assessment, both parties have moved towards this sort of market membership, where it's not just that it's about money, it's about that the outcomes provided by the market are fair and right and just, and anything else is interfering with the market. And it's very much like you're describing a sort of fundamentalist philosophy where government just says we shouldn't be involved in anything, and the less government the better, which is. It's an interesting thing when you look into this, but the people who are running for elected office and essentially saying that there should be no government, tax on redistribution if you just let the market take hold, what happens is that wealth gets concentrated, as it says in the net of repair composition. And those who have money, sort of thinking of the maximum, it takes money to make money. Those who have money will have their wealth grow, and those who don't will lose it. I'm not positive that that's exactly where we're headed. I think that there's a small, very vocal segment of the population that believes they would like to see that in the abstract, but when you actually talk about, okay, so you don't want any government involvement, so we should have Social Security, very few people actually want that sort of thing, only on the theoretical level. And then there is the other part is that what we work on, I think, the fair economy at its core is building movement. And we need to, if we can continue to establish not just a political movement, but a social movement that really changes the way that people think about these things, then we won't do that. In fact, there is even some hope that will lead to better ideas and move away from market fundamentalism towards system where prosperity can't be more broadly shared. That's entirely possible. I think that if you look at what's happened over the years, there's been a lot of good advancements. I mentioned Social Security, that's a government program that's been instituted. Plenty of opposition, but it's a good idea, and it's the right thing to do, and it ultimately did happen, and that sort of thing is possible. So I would be pushed back for it. Take away those services, benefits, and suggest that it's only fair to let the wealthiest people keep 100% of their money, as some folks manage to do without paying any taxes. But there will always be a push that there is something called the common good, and there is some greater purpose to society.
So you hear just where it's just coming up, just past half past the hour, it's going to be up to our 96.5 LPFM in Sarasota, Florida. This is a surreal news show, and I just need to get that in there. So, well, the time is just flying by here because we only have another minute or so left. Tell us, what is the plan? What can we do? How can we help build this new society?
Well, I mean, you and I assume the listeners are starting out doing the right thing. The best thing to do is to stay informed and to talk about this stuff as much as you can, really. One of the things that happens is people tend to sort of keep stuff to themselves, and don't do that because we need to talk about this and we need to get involved in every way that we can. Certainly, voting is important. Voting is all there is. So educate yourself and educate others. Look for the resources and tools that help us understand things better. Don't just accept that the economy is a work of God. It's the work of people, and we as allies have the ability to change it if we stand to the criteria.
You are a nonprofit, you're nonpartisan, and if people want to, let's say, I have some questions about the state and federal taxes, and I want to get some more information. Where can people go? Tell us about your website to get more information.
Our website is www.faireconomy.org. It's got a lot of great tools and resources. We specifically do education. I highly recommend looking that up and even calling us if you're interested in setting up a workshop with a community group. We focus on the fair economy, as we mentioned, on federal taxes, and we also work on state taxes, which are an extremely important area. Where federal taxes are a little bit progressive, it's designed so that the wealthy pay a little bit more state taxes. We do some organizing as well, and it's all here on the website again. So www.faireconomy.org.
I feel like we could talk all day, but we are flat out of time. Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you.
Oh, yeah, it's great. Thank you so very much.
All right, I'm going to have to cut you off there. Thank you so much. We just ran out of time.